first case for oral argument this morning is Sherry Miller and others, appellants versus Lawrence County Appellee. For the appellants, we have Mr. Ken Barker, attorney from Belfouche, and for the appellee, we have Mr. Thomas Brady, an attorney also from Spearfish, excuse me. And I don't have the name of your co-counsel, Mr. Brady.
Mr. Bruce Allen.
Okay, but you'll be presenting this morning?
He will not participate in our...
No, I asked if you were presenting.
Yes.
Okay. With that, Mr. Barker, you may proceed, sir, and you have 20 minutes.
Thank you, Mr. Chief Justice. Good morning. May it please the court, counsel, students, and faculty, and I'd like to recognize the members of the Miller-Mitchell family who are here, some who have traveled from Oregon to be here this morning. Thank you for the privilege of appearing here at the law school. This case involves Lawrence County's condemnation and the taking of private property, specifically 206 acres owned by the Mitchell Estate. The Mitchell Estate is a third-generation ranching ranch in Lawrence County, South Dakota. Lawrence County declared in September of 2007 that it was taking 207 acres of that ranch for the expansion of the Black Hills Clyde Ice Airport. The stated purpose of the expansion was to accommodate, as set forth in the petition, to accommodate larger, more complex aircraft, specifically, as they said, as the county said, Class B-2 aircraft, which by the petition and the resolution for the declaration of taking stated that they would require a longer runway and more complex approaches. The centerpiece of this appeal is that as a result of accommodating more complex aircraft, more airspace is being taken. That airspace is substantial, a substantial property interest that was not declared in the petition or the resolution of taking, and for which our clients, the Miller-Mitchell family, have not been compensated.
Let me ask you, when did that issue arise at the trial court level? You did not file an inverse condemnation.
I did not, Justice Meyer Henry, file an inverse condemnation counterclaim. The issue came up after the petition was filed, and we reviewed the statutes, and the statutes indicated, and as well as the petition, of course, and we reviewed the statutes, and the statutes clearly say in South Dakota that there is a property right in airspace, and that airspace is defined specifically as 500 to 1,000 feet, depending upon the location. And that property right was not declared in the petition.
Would that be airspace over property other than the 207 acres?
Correct.
So the airspace over the 207 acres would have been part of the damages in the case that you tried?
Yes.
But it's the other airspace that you're talking about.
It's the other airspace. To be very clear about that, the taking considered 515 acres, and our appraisers, both the counties and ours, considered the before and after diminution in value of the 206 acres from the 515. As I said in the briefs, that was an homogeneous piece. Despite that fact, what we're claiming as far as the impact of airspace exceeds that 515 acres. In fact, it laps over into the 1,900 acre ranch. In addition to affecting a substantial portion of the remainder of the Mitchell Ranch, it also affects a number of neighbors who we believe in the future, as a result of the study done by our expert, Clyde Pittman, will show that they're going to have substantial building restrictions. According to Mr. Pittman's report, those restrictions will range from anything from no building to very limited construction of buildings. I think that's perhaps lost in the response that we received from the county. Those restrictions will be in place once the the Federal Aeronautics Commission, the FAA, adopts the airport approach plan. The airport approach plan is a very technical document, but we expect that it will mirror the mapping that our expert, Clyde Pittman, presented, and it's a part of the appendix of our second brief, pages 15 and 16. That map shows that there's a significant overlay of affected airspace beyond the taking of the 206 acres. Once the FAA, the Federal Aeronautics Administration, adopts that, the South Dakota Aeronautics Commission, by statute, must adopt that airport approach plan. Once that's adopted, then the county is incumbent upon the county, and the statutes say they shall adopt zoning ordinances that mirror restrictions announced by our Aeronautics Commission. In other words, those building restrictions have to be consistent with the airport approach plan. We expect that those restrictions will, again, severely restrict development and thus taking of a property interest.
But my understanding is the trial court threw you out on summary judgment because you didn't have any evidence about the amount of damages. I don't know that it probably isn't that much in dispute whether or not there will be regulations put into place. But my understanding was he threw you out on that because you had not come forward to show that you had any damages.
And we haven't been bashful about that. Justice Meyer-Henry, that's absolutely the case. He stated that we did not quantify that loss, and that's very true. The reason we didn't quantify the loss is because it's not yet a measurable loss until the actual airport approach plan is adopted by the South Dakota Aeronautics Commission.
Well, that brings us right to the nub of the question. This is a future event that you're asking about. You, in your argument, you've already indicated there's a step A and a step B and a step C, and you expect this to happen in the future. And as I understand Mr. Pittman's affidavit, he says it's expected that extensions might accommodate Class C and D aircraft, but the resolution here only involves B2 aircraft. So aren't we really talking about something to happen in the future? And that's when you need to bring your claim?
Very much so, Justice Center. This was the quandary I was placed in. Going back to the question by Justice Meyer-Henry as well, what about an inverse condemnation case? Well, we didn't think that it was ripe yet. We didn't have all of the evidence. We didn't feel that we had admissible evidence to present to a jury or to the court that shows what the quantifiable loss is. The loss has occurred. The loss has occurred because the airport expansion is already built. They are accommodating those aircraft.
Well, I've got to stop you right there, because if it's not time for an inverse condemnation action, then why is it time for a compensable direct condemnation action? How can it be?
I'm sorry,
as I understood what you just said, It's not yet time to bring an inverse condemnation action. If it's not time to bring an inverse condemnation action, you can't proceed on your direct action either, can you?
Well, we proceeded on the... Well, that's a question of whether the court had jurisdiction to condemn the 206 acres. And we haven't appealed that. But beyond the 206 acres, my argument is it's not yet ripe. And the reason why we didn't plead an inverse condemnation case is because of the issue that it's not yet ripe. And it can't be brought until there's a formal adoption of the airport approach plan by a South Dakota entity. And that was the quandary.
Does the petition need to say airspace?
Absolutely. There is no question. In this day and age, when I'm sure this court is going to have before it at some point in time in the future, if it hasn't already, issues involving airspace easements. Airspace easements as a result of the generation of power through wind energy is very much a commercial property interest. It's a bundle of property rights that are sold and bought and traded. It's no different than the case here, where Lawrence County has appropriated a property interest without even declaring it to be so in its petition. And that is by virtue of the fact that they're using the airspace over the Mitchell property without paying for it.
Mr. Parker, how Judge Bastian, in his order, is the crux of this the last part of the order where it says for the land belonging, which was taken September 15th, has allegedly caused or will cause compensable damage. Is that what we hear about, is the breadth of that order?
It's the breadth of the order. It exceeded, frankly, in my opinion, the motion.
How did he? Oh, all right. Is that why we're here?
Yes. As I stated in our first brief, that's what I think the remedy to this is that I think it needs to, the judge's summary judgment order needs to be reversed so that there can be future proceedings. The problem with, we had to raise this issue to begin with.
So because if we are to hold today that your claim today is premature, but you can bring it at a later time, you go home happy?
I would go home smiling.
Okay.
Chief Justice, that's all we're here about. I had to raise the issue in the first place because it may be declared res judicata later, and I didn't want that to happen, so I had to raise the issue, even though I didn't think that we had sufficient facts or admissible evidence to present the claim as a pleading.
So it's kind of a preemptive appeal.
It's a preemptive appeal. I guess that's the best way to put it, and I think Mr. Brady put it in his brief that it was a unique circumstance, probably unprecedented, but nevertheless necessary, because I don't want to be precluded from bringing this action. That's as succinct as I can make it, because of the circumstances, we just didn't have a choice.
It's too bad we're not in the smile business. Did you, by raising the issue yourself, cause this to be preclusive in some future action? Since you raised the issue and the trial court ruled on it, did you perhaps put yourself in a position where the issue now has been or will be res judicata?
Well, Justice Konecamp, possibly. I considered that, whether it was issue preclusion or claim preclusion, because I raised it. I didn't raise it in a pleading, and so I felt that I am okay, but I felt that I nevertheless had to go forward. And, of course, we argued the summary judgment as best we could, given Mr. Pittman's report, and clearly acknowledging that we have not yet quantified the loss. But there nevertheless is damage that has occurred. We just haven't been able to measure it yet. But I was very, very concerned about that, actually. What do you do in that situation? But I thought that it was better to be prudent and bring the issue to the court in the first place then wait whatever number of months or years and raise the issue and then have it declared res judicata.
And as I understand the briefs, it doesn't matter after the point it was submitted, but the zoning hearings had not taken place to identify the height restrictions or airspace restrictions.
Justice Stevenson, no, they have not yet taken place. An interesting comment on that, an historical note, is in our research, it doesn't appear that the airport approach plan for Spearfish Airport has been revised since 1979. It's going to be a question of how long is it going to take for the county to adopt the ordinances that are consistent with the approach plan. Then the issue is going to be one of ripeness, of course, and it's our belief that once the South Dakota Aeronautics Commission adopts the airport approach plan, there has to be, the statute says very clearly that the county shall. And at that point in time, we believe that there is a shadow cast over the land, the remaining Mitchell property, that prohibits building in one way or form, and that the loss takes place then. And hopefully we're not going to be before this court arguing that issue down the road, but that's certainly a possibility, depending on how long it takes. So I guess the questions kind of got to the heart of really what the briefs are about and what our presentation, what this appeal is about. We don't think that there's any question that airspace is a recognizable property interest in the state of South Dakota. We think that's well beyond the point. The court's analysis in Benson versus the state of South Dakota, I think perhaps analyzes best how that property right is identified. And I think Justice Gilbertson's analysis on issue three gets to the heart of whether there is a constitutional taking, an impermissible taking. But it's a cause in fact, and I, of course, what distinguishes this case from the Benson case is that the harm has already occurred. There is an invasion of airspace. The invasion took place once these larger aircraft were accommodated. And that's That's the distinction. But I think, nevertheless, even though you in the Benson case decided that there was not a taking, in this case, I think we're distinguished by the fact that there is a...
At least some of us did.
Well, okay. duly noted, Justice Meyer-Henry. I happened to be on the commission at the time, as you know. So it was an interesting decision. So and I followed it with interest. But I perhaps will end with the way I was going to start, and that was with a quote that you have in the Benson case. A permanent physical occupation or an appropriation by government of private property is the most serious form of invasion into an owner's property interest and constitutes a per se regulatory physical taking. I think that quote from the Benson case, quoting Laredo, which of course is a seminal case from the U.S. Supreme Court, really defines what this case is about. The Mitchell family is entitled to their compensation for a taking. The county must acknowledge that they have taken this property, and we will go from there. Thank you for your time.
I have a question.
Oh, sure.
Following up on Justice Severson's question, I want to know exactly which part of that summary judgment order that you're taking issue with. It's the part about the future. What relief exactly do you want here? Do you want us to reverse that partial summary judgment order, all of it, or just that last phrase?
Justice Center, what we're asking is that this court reverse the granting of summary judgment in its entirety as it reflects on any future loss of airspace.
The future loss is what Justice Severson, I think, was referring to.
Yes. And the answer to that question is yes.
And is that over the 207 acres as well as the 500 and some?
No, it is not.
The remainder.
Right. Because the petition described that the 206 acres, that is part of the taking, and I don't think that we can make a legitimate argument that they were not entitled. As you've described it, it's a part of the bundle of property rights that you get when you transfer property. But that illustrates why it's so important that governmental entities accurately describe the nature of their taking. The petition is a instrument of conveyance. It is an instrument of conveyance, and it should be required, especially of governments, that they be required to specifically define what they're taking. So.
Thank you. You're down.
Okay, thank you.
Appreciate it.
You bet.
Okay. Mr. Brady, you have 20 minutes, sir.
Thank you. Pleasure to be here, counsel. We need to first focus on the limited issue of appeal, and it is strictly in regard to the partial summary judgment and nothing else. We must also focus on what the condemnation proceeding was, in that it was a partial taking, in that Lawrence County condemned 206 acres of a 1,960-acre ranch. That was the Miller Mitchell Estate Ranch, 206 acres of it. And it described in its petition its purpose and the reason for the taking. We must also recognize it is the landowner's burden of proof as to damages. Damages are in regard to the balance of the property not taken in a partial takings case. And so, to the extent airspace would be a property interest, if in fact a property interest that would be subject to this taking, That is a collateral damage claim for which the landowners had the privilege and right to assert and the obligation to prove. When we received the Clyde Pittman report that described alleged effects of airspace on the airspace of the 1,960 acres, we then filed a motion for partial summary judgment. And the exclusive basis of that motion was that there was not expert testimony, evidence, as to damage, as to reduction in value on the 1,960 acres.
How can we know that when we don't know exactly what the FAA is going to, what kind of rules they're going to impose?
Well, that's a different issue. That's a future issue. We need to look at the present issue as it is structured. Okay? And
let's go back to the same order. Does Judge Bastian's order preclude the future actions? Isn't that what this case is about?
No, it doesn't preclude. If Lawrence County, or actually the city of Spearfish, which part of this airport is in the city, if either of them were to adopt a zoning ordinance pursuant to 50-10, then just like any other zoning ordinance, is that a taking? And that would be a question to then be addressed.
All right.
So the court didn't make a prospective conclusion that there never could be a taking.
So you're conceding that the landowners can file an inverse condemnation proceeding against the county at such times as ordinances limit their use of the airspace.
Well, I can't prevent them from filing their suit. I think that I might prevent them from successfully concluding that suit, because what the trial court was not asked to address, and it's not an issue before this court, and was not an issue before the trial court, was whether or not airspace on the aviation aspect is a property right subject to being taken. That has not been addressed by this court. It wasn't addressed to the trial court. And I would point you to SDCL 50-13-13 and 50-13-14. So the issue of airspace taking is not been resolved and is not an issue before this court, nor was it an issue before the trial court. The point before the trial court was, to the extent there was a taking of airspace, if airspace was a property interest that could be taken, there was no valuation on it. And so it was strictly the valued issue.
But Mr. Brady, you're focusing on value.
Correct.
But before you get to value, you have to show a restricted use of the property. And as I read the record, the trial court said there was insufficient evidence of a certain enough decrease in usage. And if you don't have that at that point, you don't even get to value. You couldn't get an expert to give an opinion on value. Aren't you jumping one step by looking at value when it's not even certain what the restrictions are going to be?
Well, I think it's speculative to here today to say that it wasn't known what some of the restrictions would be, because that information was readily available and used by Mr. Pittman and available to the Millers, because there are information and a lot of data and a phenomenal amount of data produced in discovery. So to say that nothing was known, that's not true. But I don't think this court can sit here and say it was or was not raised judicata until you really see the entire record or the issue that would be raised at the next claim, if a next claim ever arose, and what was or could have been litigated at this time. That body of information isn't here, nor so it's asking you for an advisory opinion to speculate what could have or was not litigated at the initial trial.
Well, doesn't the petition of the governmental entity set the litigation issue as far as the taking?
Certainly. It was a partial taking. And it was 206 acres, and it set forth in the petition the purpose of the taking.
Why wasn't there airspace identified in the partial taking?
I don't think it's required to do so. Just like if you look at...
Why not?
That's an alleged collateral damage.
Do you have authority for that?
No, I don't have authority to say that it had to be set forth in there. It set forth the purpose of the use, and it's obvious that the Millers and their experts knew that airspace may come into play, but there's also no determination that an airspace interest even exists.
But wait a minute.
As to airports.
What about 50-13-3? Ownership of airspace above land and water of this state shall be vested in the several owners of the surface beneath. That's pretty plain.
Yes, it is, as is 50-13-13 and 50-13-14, which says use of airspace conferred without liability to owners. And 13 deals with air highway for takeoff or landing purposes. And so there are exceptions to what might be viewed by the statute you cite. And that wasn't an issue before the trial court.
I want to go back to, you didn't address when I asked Judge Bastian's order, the last part of it, which says, which is a allegedly cause or will cause compensable damage to the defendant's remaining property. Now, are you saying, I want to get very clear, are you saying that that is not a problem, and if not, why not? Why does that not preclude them from coming in the future on an inverse condemnation claim?
It doesn't preclude them from coming in the future on an inverse condemnation claim as to any alleged taking that would be compensable after that date.
After.
The date of that judgment. So if, as of the date of that partial summary judgment, there was a quantifiable, first of all, if there was an airspace interest that was subject to have been taken and was in fact taken by that condemnation proceeding, which was then quantifiable, identifiable, for which the landowner had the burden of proof to show, anything as of that date would be raised judicata. Any action by a governmental entity after that date...
Okay, now, just so we're clear, are you saying that they had the burden to prove collateral damage by the taking of the 207 acres, so that precludes them from raising any issue in the remaining 1,900 acres in the future?
As to any damages that were then identifiable or then quantifiable, or any claim that could have been made at that time of that taking, the answer is absolutely yes.
Then why didn't you have to put that in your declaration of taking, that you were taking this airspace?
Because, number one, I don't know that airspace was taken in view of SDCL 50-13-13 and 50-13-14. But secondly, that would be a collateral damage claim to the larger tract in a partial taking. And, I mean, that would be, you take like the Corson Village Sanitary District case. There, adjoining, that was a partial taking. The remainder said, well, the odor of that sewage disposal system is going to cause damage. I'm sure the county in there didn't say we're going to spew order. That was a collateral damage claim that the landowner brought forward. In the Basin Electric cases, that was in regard to a potential irrigation. The court concluded that was speculation. What effect, what collateral effect is there on the balance of the property? That's an issue for the landowner to determine and to assert the claim and prove up. And so I just don't see that that language is required when we identified our purpose and the scope of that project.
Well, when the state condemns land for an interstate, part of the declaration of taking points out that you're going to lose possible access that you had when it was a two-lane highway. They're upfront about it, and yet here the landowner is supposed to figure out that, hey, I might lose my airspace rights. I may not be able to build a building. Yet, don't you think you have some obligation to level with the landowner and say, not only are you losing this real estate and they're above it, but you're going to probably lose some of the air rights you have above the remaining acreage? That's a property right.
Well, it hasn't been litigated as to airspace relative to air highways as to those property rights of an owner.
Well, when you look at all the... Let's assume we decide that it is. Now what?
I still don't think it's... let's apply it to the facts of this case. Obviously, that disclosure was not made. So let's assume that... it would be a taking. Let's assume that you would conclude that disclosure would need to be made.
So would either throw out the petition and require you to disclose that, or would they have to bring an inverse condemnation claim?
Well, in the facts of this case, they were well aware of the airspace issue because they raised it, they brought it forward, they filed the expert report.
Okay, but is that due to the taking of the 206 acres, or is that due to the future zoning requirements as to the use of that airspace?
Well, both. Because when you take the 206 acres and extend an airport, you have these flight patterns. They are givens. There's reference to the FAA regulations. In the resolution, it's there.
Well, it sounds like now you're saying, well, we didn't declare it as part of our petition, but we're going to raise that as a preclusion in a future claim.
Well, and I guess if we raise it as a preclusion in a future claim that hasn't been made, that will be litigated at the trial court level first, and if there's a disagreement, it'll come here. But that issue isn't before this court in this case.
I'm not sure that it isn't.
The summary judgment, and look at Statement of Fact 3, Statement of Fact 8. Look at the reply brief, Appendix A, page 5. And it goes right through what the issue was on summary, on the partial summary judgment. There was not evidence of damage, and that's why they couldn't. They could have presented the Pittman expert information if they had evidence of damage. Now, for them to speculate that adoption of a zoning ordinance may create other damage in the future, that's another issue. I agree. That is a different issue.
But what if it's based on the Pittman expectation of the nature of the restrictions that are going to come?
Well,
Pittman had an opinion about what he thought, what he expected would occur. And what you're saying that they're not entitled to proceed along the lines of Pittman's expectations. Isn't that what you're saying? The summary judgment would preclude that in the future?
Well, Pittman's opinions were also conjecture and speculation as to what might happen in the future. That's true, and That certainly wasn't relevant at this time, but he also had opinions as to what the effect was at that time. Two separate issues. And the reason the court granted the summary judgment was, first of all, that was speculative when he started talking about C's and D-type craft. But the court entered the summary judgment on the absence of evidence of damage, collateral damage to the 1,960 acres, in that even to the extent Pittman expressed an opinion that there was the taking resulted in a loss of airspace, there was not the requisite expert opinion of damage to present to the jury. It takes both issues, both the collateral damage event and then an analysis of the economic effect of that event. So to the extent, if there was air rights taken by the result of that petition, and they were quantifiable at that time, then I would respectfully submit that would be raised judicata in the future.
Was there anything that was quantifiable at the time of summary judgment? Was
certainly
there in excess of B2, in excess of a B2 taking?
In excess of a B2
right.
taking? No. But up to a B2 taking in the flight patterns and the FAA regulations, that was all known. Now, when or if the state gets around to adopting the airport approach plan and ordinances are enacted and things of that nature, that's a subsequent event.
But what if those are consistent with the B2 taking?
If they're consistent with B2 taking, then there isn't another taking. It's already happened. Only if it would be inconsistent, excessive, beyond that, and then the ordinances go beyond that, and then this court or the trial court would determine that is a taking rather than the proper exercise of police powers. But those are all issues that aren't here on this appeal. It's asking you for an advisory opinion as to what if, and that information isn't here. It hasn't been resolved at the trial court, and it isn't properly presented here. It's just a line is drawn at the information that existed then on what that taking was.
Well, are you saying that there's no issue on any of the land other than the 206 acres based on the restriction on use of airspace? You didn't put it in your petition. So is there any restriction beyond the 200, over the 206 or beyond that at this point?
Well, I don't acknowledge that there's airspace to be taken on an airport deal when you look at 50-13-13 and 50-13-14. But that aside, to the extent airspace was consumed, I guess, or however you want to phrase it, that was identifiable. That would be a collateral damage claim if it's a recognized damage that could be quantified at that time. So I'm not sure I answered your question.
So does it hinge on whether we call it damages or whether it's a property right? You're calling it damages. What if we say it's a property right?
Well, it has to be a property right first for there to be damages.
Well, you said it was just collateral damages, but if it's a property right, then it's a taking. Then you have a whole other set of requirements in your petition and so forth.
No, that is a collateral effect of the taking, I believe.
Your time has expired, counsel. Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Barker, you have 10 minutes, sir.
To begin with, burden of proof. It is the county's burden to accurately describe its taking. This is a taking. There is no question about it. And this court has clearly said, as recently as the Casey Partnership versus Casey case, that it's the burden of the party at trial that has to go forward and establish the basis for its motion for summary judgment. The county did not do so.
Except you're making a severance claim. And that when you make a severance claim, the burden shifts.
We made a severance claim only in respect to pointing out that there are additional property rights that have not been described by the county in its petition. And this court has clearly said in a case of first impression in the city of Sioux Falls, the city of Sioux Falls case that it is the governmental entities, and I will quote it, is the governmental entity's duty to properly describe in its petition. I'm paraphrasing, City of Sioux Falls versus Missouri Basin. And the test is whether the petition is apt to mislead the people who are being affected by it. And there's no question that this petition would be misleading. There are people whose property rights are being affected by this action who haven't even been notified yet. That simply when they go to the courthouse and ask for the building permit, they're going to have to be denied that. And
all right, Mr. Barker, right? I think you said that as to the 206 acres, as to any height restrictions, that's not an issue in this case.
That is not an issue.
All right. Is the taking or is the issue by the taking of that 206 acres or by the future zoning restrictions? Was there any restrictions on your other property by the taking of the 206 acres?
Yes.
Right. What is that?
And those restrictions are those described by Mr. Pittman. There are going to be building restrictions at various levels.
But there's not now.
But there is not now.
Do we have to decide that there is a property interest taken by restricting airspace in order for you to succeed today?
I think that's the threshold question.
It's never been decided in South Dakota.
I agree with that.
If that's true, then how do you explain or obviate or whatever the two statutes that council has been repeatedly telling us apply here or will apply, 15, 13, and 14?
Well, that was one of the issues I wanted to get to. This court has said very clearly in peri materiae, that is that all statutes that are related to one subject matter or a subject have to be considered together. And that is that the statutes cited by Mr. Brady for airport approach plans have to be also considered with the statutes that also announce that there is a property right in airspace. And they have to be considered together, first and fundamentally. In addition to that, this court has said repeatedly, and the Constitution says that in Article 6, Section 13, the South Dakota Constitution says that you shall not take property or damage it without just compensation.
So do we have to say then that 15, 13, 13 is unconstitutional?
Absolutely not.
Because it denies a claim for liability, seemingly.
Right. Well, I don't interpret it that way. I disagree with that interpretation strenuously. I think these statutes can be interpreted together, but what this court has said is that our South Dakota Constitution and Article 5 of the U.S. Constitution doesn't prohibit a taking under appropriate circumstances, but what it requires is just compensation. And just compensation requires that the property right first be identified and then quantified. And to this date, even today, the county has not yet acknowledged that it is taking a property right. That's protected by statute and protected by our Constitution. And until that acknowledgement takes place, then we should be entitled to our right to go forward. And unfortunately, the trial court's ruling on summary judgment precludes us from doing that because it is conceivably, or theoretically, res judicata. And Mr. Brady attempted to rationalize those inconsistencies, but they can't be. There is no rationalization. Once the property has been taken, then there is a right, an obligation to properly compensate the owners, and that has not yet taken place. So it's very clear to us anyway that with respect to any effect of the taking of airspace outside the 206 acres, that is still a claim, and should be the Mitchell Miller family should be able to bring it once the South Dakota Aeronautics Commission adopts its airport approach plan.
You know, did Pittman say, or do you claim that there was some restriction on the remaining property simply as a result of FAA standards for a B2 taking?
Mr.
Nothing more. Not C, not D, not speculation about a bigger aircraft may be able to land. I'm just talking about FAA standards for B2 large aircraft.
The answer is yes. That is a result of accommodating B2 aircraft, more airspace will be required for takeoff and landings.
And Pittman said that someplace.
Yes, he did. And it's set out in our initial brief. We set out each of the items that he commented on. I forget the page number. But he barely, very clearly identified that B2 aircraft, it's on page 23 of our first brief, Justice, and the extension of the runway will accommodate currently B2 aircraft and larger aircraft, but certainly with the B2 aircraft, there will be additional airspace that will be required. As to the validity of the petition, this court has said that, again, in the issue of first impression in the city of Sioux Falls case, is that the petition must accurately describe the property to be taken. It cited three cases from Nebraska, and I think those cases are illustrative. The trilogy of cases, one was a 1924 case from Nebraska that involved the placement of a dam on a creek. And the question before the Nebraska Supreme Court was, would the tailing waters of the dam, would that encroach on people's property who had not been described in the petition of taking? I think it's very analogous to the situation that we have here. And that is the Nebraska Supreme Court said, you can do that. You should be able, sir.
Okay, yes. Just so we're clear, you said that there was by accommodating B2 speed aircraft, that you're dealing with a taking over other land. Mr. Brady's position is that that was collateral, and your position is that it had to be in the petition. Is that where we're at? So you didn't put any value into evidence or by affidavit as to what the value of that taking of the B2 was as collateral. Is that correct?
Justice Severson, that is absolutely correct. We did not quantify any of that loss for B2 taking. The petition said we are taking the 206 acres and impliedly the airspace above it, and that was what the litigation was about. The court's order on summary judgment unfortunately went broader than that and said that and that we've had that discussion.
Okay.
And it's our opinion that this court in the city of Sioux Falls adopted very strict requirements for that petition, and those property rights should have been measured. They should have been identified. Our expert, Mr. Pittman, was able to identify on a map, a very precise map, exactly what property would be affected as a result of the accommodating of these aircraft. The county, in its rush to build this airport, didn't do what it should have done. It didn't do its homework. It could clearly have identified that as a result of its project, it was going to be affecting these property owners. It's much like the Nebraska Supreme Court said in 1924, is if you're going to build a dam, you're going to back up water. Your engineers can figure out how far it's going to be backed up. It's a 16-foot dam. for crying out loud, you can measure it. And they made them go back and do it. I think the same thing applies here. Lawrence County should have to go back and do what it should have done in the first place. Certainly, if it's allowed to prevail, and I see my time is up.
You can finish your sentence.
Okay. Certainly, if it's allowed to prevail, the effect is the taking of property without ever being accountable for it. It has not to face public scrutiny. It has not to pay compensation for it. It simply has taken it.
Okay. Thank you, Council. Court will be in recess for 10 minutes.